Hey everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Digital Drift. My name is Francis. I'm co-founder at ProWalk, and I'm not alone as usual. We have Ekwemi with us also on the show today. Hi, Ekwemi.
Hi. I'm good, thanks. How are you, Francis? I mean, it's been quite a while, so I'm really happy to be doing this again.
Yeah, our last episode was maybe back in April or so. Man.
Life has happened, a lot of life, but yeah.
We tried doing one in, I think, August or so, but you were going to travel and all that stuff, so yeah. Then I traveled in September, and, you know, this is October now. Crazy stuff. Today is quite an interesting episode. We have Ire Aderinoku on the show. The last time I tried mentioning the surname on the show, I didn't get it right, but Ire is joining us today. Hi, Ire.
Hi, everyone. Really happy to be on here. And yeah, you didn't really say it correctly, but that's all right.
Wait, I didn't get it this time again.
No, okay, it was better than last time. I think last time you said Aderinoku or something
No, I mean, this is Aderinoku, right?
Yeah,
perfect. You see, I'm getting better at this. Okay.
Yeah, after how many months?
For those of you who don't know Ire, she's done a lot of work around front-end web development, and recently she's been named one of the few Google developer experts we have right around us here in Nigeria. She's given a lot of talks around how to get the web to more people, talking about progressive web apps and recently progressive enhancement too. But before we get into all that, which is fairly recent, right, Ire, we want to maybe get a bit of background about how you got into tech and maybe even a little bit before that, so that people will know where you're coming from and perhaps can also look at how far you've come.
Okay, sure. So, well, right now I'm a UI designer, and I do front-end development as well. I work at Big Cabal Media, so the people that do Tech Cabal and Zikoko. So I work as their head of technology there now. So before I got into this, I actually studied for my undergraduate degree psychology and then for my master's law, which is completely random, and everyone is always like, okay, how did you get into this now? But I guess at the time, I wasn't really thinking about tech or especially web development, because I didn't know any other people who were doing it. So I didn't think of it as something you could actually do as a job. So I would just be doing it kind of as a hobby on and off. So I even started, I don't even know if I can really call it web development, but I started playing around with it like since I was maybe 14. But I only really started recently actually getting into it a few years ago. So while I was doing my master's, maybe about 3 years ago is when I decided, or I started doing it more seriously. So I started learning the current technologies and things like that. So then when I graduated, I started working freelance and did a couple of jobs and then started working here.
Interesting. Oh, maybe not too interesting, right?
Well, it's kind of interesting because people are always shocked that, well, first of all, that I never studied it formally. So it's mainly self-taught, or I won't call it self-taught. It's more like reading other people's stuff and learning that way.
How would you say that? Because I find the fact that you study psychology to be a very, very helpful thing when it comes to technology, because people seem to see technology as the end goal, like, I'm going to create tech that just for tech's sake. But I just want to see from your perspective, like, how has what you studied, you know, enhanced or helped the way you think about what you're doing now? Like, has it come into play at all?
It has, in a way. I think it's been more useful for things like user experience design. So a lot of things that's, I guess I learned while I was studying psychology, but for some reason I just kind of assumed that a lot of other people might be aware of. So those things really actually helped me. So things like even creating a user story or just being able to see things from other people's perspectives, and those kind of things help for user experience design. So I'd say that it helped with that respect.
So what will be the next target of where you want to, in terms of okay, you're doing UI development now, but tomorrow you could, I don't know, what would be the thing you would do to enhance your present skills or that you would like to go into? I was at some event yesterday with a group of women in technology, and a lot of people were talking about wanting to go into AI and robotics and all those things. So I just wondered, what would be the next step in view for you? I mean, it could just be short term. It doesn't have to be like long term.
Yeah, that's kind of difficult, and it's something I'm trying to still figure out myself as well. AI is something I'm very interested in, and my problem is probably that I'm just interested in too many different things. So I recently finished a nano degree on Udacity, and I was thinking maybe I should do a different one, and there are just so many different ones. So there's like a self-driving car engineer one, or like virtual reality or machine learning, and I want to do like all of them. But I guess at the moment I'm just trying to decide which one to do. At the moment I feel like what I'm might be most practical for me is to do something like iOS, because I've always been really interested in mobile development and I like iOS development, so I might try and do something like that. But I definitely want to try a different field from what I'm doing right now and just see how that works out.
Okay, cool things. What has been your best experience of, you know, doing what you do? What makes you sort of get up every morning?
Well, on a day-to-day basis, what kind of keeps me interested is that I'm always solving one problem or the other. And whenever I get something in my head, like I want to build something or I want to just try and recreate something, then I can just like keep doing it until I complete it without eating, without sleeping, all of that. So, I mean, usually I'll sleep, but I can definitely go without eating if I'm, like, really into what I'm doing. That's kind of what keeps me going on a day-to-day basis. And more since I've been doing speaking more often, I found it rewarding once you actually get up and complete it. So that's something that I like to do more of, and I hope I get better at as well.
Yeah, I think that it's beyond just, you know, your own skills, but reaching out to people. I think that's really important.
Yeah.
So cool.
Francis?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, just been following. And well, knowing you, I'm sure you figure it out sooner than later.
I hope so.
You were recently, I think, like 2 weeks ago at the Frontiers Conference, where you gave a presentation, which we would link, right, in the show notes for this episode.
Yeah.
A presentation on progressive enhancement.
Progressive enhancement and CSS in particular.
And not too long ago, you were on the Google tour to promote progressive web applications.
Yeah.
Are these two things, I mean, for the uninitiated person, are these two things remotely connected? Why are they important at this particular point in time?
They are sort of connected. Like, the progressive in progressive web apps is also partly to do with progressive enhancements. So I guess for people who may not be aware, progressive enhancements is kind of just about creating an experience, like a base level experience for your users whenever you're creating like a website or an application. So something that can be used by pretty much everyone, no matter what browser they're in or whether they have really, really bad connection or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of enhancing the sites for people who have the more latest browsers or faster connections, so people who don't have like all the latest stuff can still have basically the core experience that's vital for whatever site it is. But then people who have a higher level of experience can get more of the features that come with that. And so progressive web apps is basically a series of different things, different ideas put together in one thing. So the progressive enhancement aspect is that a progressive web app is basically just a regular web application. But if the user is viewing it in something like Chrome or whatever browser or Opera that supports things like Service Worker, which is what we use in progressive web apps, then they get all those extra features. So things like being able to view the site offline or things like push notifications. So it's progressive because it's just a web app, unless user has the ability to have the extra features, and then they have the enhancements of all these other extra things on top of it.
I'm learning.
So now this is mainly around inclusion, right? Because we're looking at people who have maybe not so smart browsers on their devices. Yeah. But is it like, are these just edge cases? Because, you know, this every other year we have a new, for instance, Android version coming out. We have new phones coming out. Are these like, is it that big of a problem that we have to go through all this? I mean, for the past maybe, I don't know, 7 years, 6 years, 10 years perhaps, we've always talked about progressive enhancements. Now, taking that a step further to talk about progressive web apps, are we, you know, chasing something at the margins, or is something very big?
I don't think so, because progressive web apps, they're not just for like edge cases. And even if someone is viewing a progressive web app in something like Safari on iOS that doesn't support all these features, they still have a better experience overall. So even if things like they're not getting the full progressive web app experience, they're still getting a better experience. So I think it's better for everyone, and it's not just for particular people who have like only a particular cases. It's just better across the board for everyone.
Okay, so more than talking about the technologies, like thinking about the people who are going to be using this.
It sounds like accessibility, for example, where you know, people always think, oh, I'm going to do something for people who are blind or deaf or whatever. But the thing is, we all, at some point in time, have like temporary disabilities where you're not able to see something, or you're not able to use your hands, but you need to be able to access a particular information. So once you design in a way that fits that one scenario, it just helps everyone across body. So I definitely understand from that point of view, because I had no idea what this progressive thing was. So I was like, on this call, I'm going to learn a lot as well. So this,
In comparison to accessibility is very apt, because people tend to say things like, why am I trying to make my site accessible for someone who is blind? Or people don't really tend to see the importance of that. And especially things like businesses, they don't really want to put in the extra effort or extra money to create a site that's fully accessible for everyone, for people who are blind or people who have particular disabilities. But I think if you frame it in the case of, I mean, apart from the fact that, yeah, you should try and make the site accessible for people who are blind, but apart from that, it's also making it better for everyone. So there's a real use case for that that's everyone can reap the rewards of, not just the edge cases.
Yeah.
I think in the past, you would talk about backward compatibility a bit, right? I mean, this whole context.
Sorry, can you repeat? What do you mean?
Like, we're looking at all these new technologies, right? I would say perhaps, I don't know if this is an older term, more like all-encompassing terms, like backward compatibility, where we have
baseline. Like graceful degradation.
Yeah, graceful degradation, yeah.
Well, if you go and watch my talk, which I'm going to plug right now, you can see why. I kind of went over why progressive enhancement is a better alternative to graceful degradation. Okay. Because, well, I'll just go over some of the things. So one of the main reasons that progressive enhancement is better than graceful degradation is because with the latter, you're kind of just building for whatever the current state of technology is right now, and then looking back and saying, okay, how many versions do I want to support, and then writing code probably specifically for certain browsers or certain devices. But that doesn't really scale, because what happens when next year there's something new? So you're gonna have to write something new for the newer browsers, and then you're gonna have to like start looking back again. Whereas progressive enhancements is, there's a base, you're starting from a base and you're building up. So it's kind of, I guess, endlessly backwards compatible, although not really endlessly, because at a certain point, it's not like you can support Chrome version 1 or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's more, you're starting from a base and then building up. So it's much more accepting of newer technologies and it's more forward-looking.
And this is something I'm really like touching every day. AngularJS, for instance, has no plan to ever support Opera Mini, right? So you have a lot of people in Nigeria, then they're accessing it on, a browser like Opera Mini, and the experience is totally different, and not just different, but a worse experience than what we expected. So it's a big problem, right, that we're looking at now and say, hey, most likely at the beginning of, the mobile web development, we should have, factored this into that. And I was, looking at what, for instance, Facebook does in this area. Facebook has three web versions, essentially, right? So they have their regular Facebook.com, and they have mobile.facebook.com, and they have a very, static version, hardly any JavaScript. I'm sure
there's
no JS, and it's just m.facebook.com, and it's been functioning, since like forever, and they just keep managing it and all that. So is this a different strategy to say, look, hey, because I think that's where we are going now, right? Because the Facebook model, where there's a mobile site and there's very static site for, people on the lower end devices. Now, this is different from, trying to get the same application to work across board. Does this make sense, Iri?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And what I always try to say is that it comes down to whatever it is that you are working on or whatever the project itself is, because different things are going to need different solutions. And for Facebook, this clearly makes more sense to just have separate things. And I'm actually having a similar problem as well on something I'm working on, where I wanted to use Angular 2, but it's not going to work for people on Opera Mini, so I'm probably going to have to create like a separate thing which is more static as well, that people can use, as well as something that's more high-tech. And I don't think that goes against progressive enhancements, because it's just the way you're building the application. And progressive enhancement also comes into how you're building the individual things. So there are going to be factors that you progressively enhance within each application as well. And when it comes down to it, you might just have to have separate things as well, because you're supporting things that are so wildly different that it's going to be way more of a hassle to try and bundle them in one application. So I think that's still is definitely a good solution depending on what kind of scenario it is.
Yeah, even sometimes you want to start off simple, but you have all these other scenarios that come that you didn't you couldn't think about at the beginning, or you didn't see at the beginning. And sometimes it's rather than just put that on top, perhaps it's time to just branch out and have something that takes care of that scenario better.
Yeah, for things that are so drastically different, it makes more sense to just have separate applications, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. So we've touched a bit about progressive web apps, and I think I saw the Google presentations, the conference, where they gave examples, from, some of the local companies here, particularly Conga, and how that has, helped them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I remember the next morning I got a call saying, hey, when is our app, one of our clients saying, hey, when is our app going to be good? I was like, God, I'm going to hold Google and Iray responsible for this. But
oh my God. But I think it is kind of the future of all websites, because not all websites have, although they're called progressive web apps, they don't have to be web apps. I mean, I don't even know what the difference is between a web app and a website is anymore. They seem to be kind of merging. But
yeah.
I think that it can be applied to simple websites, and maybe we'll get to a stage where you can just expect that you can visit sites while you're offline, because pretty much all of these sites have implemented some sort of like offline first strategy. So even just implementing that one thing into your website, I think that's like that's still good. So yeah, you have to go and change all of your websites to progressive web apps now.
I think locally, apart from Conga and then, yes, Bits of Code, okay, do you know any other person, you know, working towards having progressive web apps? Do you know any other person that has, like, progressive web apps that, you know, is highly visited website? Or?
The only one I can think of right now is the 737 Toolbox.
Oh, right.
I don't know if you know about it. You know those codes that you can use to send money?
Yeah,
for things like GT Bank thing.
GT Bank, yeah.
Yeah, so Ope from Paystack, or the designer at Paystack, and he's also at Hello World.
Okay.
He created like a progressive web app for that, and it works really well, especially on Android, because, I mean, there's some limitations to what you can do on websites with iOS, but with Android, you can do probably a lot more, and like, all you have to do is maybe type in a few things, and then you can even go direct to the call, and then it'll automatically start sending the code for you, and it's really cool. So that's one. Yeah, at Dev Center Square, which is where they do some open source projects, they're creating this disease info database thing, and I think that they're also in the process of trying to convert it to a progressive web app.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think that's all I know for now, but I'm sure more people are, it seems anyway, like more people are trying to get into it.
Yeah. Well, one progressive web app example that kind of struck me as curious was the Conga use case, right? Now, because somehow, they said one of the hardest things in computer science is invalidating catches, right? So if you have something stored locally, how do you know when, you know, it has changed, and then how do you know when to like refresh that? And Conga being like e-commerce, I should go and look at the app and before jump, but like Conga being like an e-commerce platform, you know, I would expect that, okay, things like price changes or availability of product is something that would affect the decision to make offline capability in their mobile app. So it's like, or their mobile website, it's like, how do you solve this kind of issues, especially for sites that have data that change very frequently?
Yeah, that's true. I didn't actually think about that with respect to their prices. So if a price changes and a user is using their offline version, so it hasn't updated, then what do they do? I'm not sure how they handle that. I assume that they will actually have to just sell it to the user at that price, because maybe that's just a risk that they've decided to take. But with respect to updating progressive web apps, it's actually more simple than you would imagine. Once you kind of know how to work with the service worker, because that can be a bit more difficult, learning how to update cache and stuff there. But there are a few libraries you can use, so that you can make it pretty simple that once a user visits the page again and they just refresh, it will automatically update. So things like that are probably a bit more simple with progressive web apps if you're using the right libraries and once you kind of get how the service worker lifecycle works.
Yeah, because I was looking at your article, and yes, Iri has a fantastic 3-part article on building progressive web apps on Bits of Code. That's bitsofco.de. A very famous blog, you know, that would get interested. Yeah, so she has a very fantastic 3-part article. I think the third part is coming out on Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we can predict these things.
Yeah, so the third part is going to be about push notifications, which was... it's probably the part I was most excited to write about, because it was the hardest part to do, because there aren't that much resources about how to implement push notifications on just websites. So even if you go to, I think it's because Google Cloud messaging that I use, which is now Firebase Cloud Messaging.
Okay.
And that change happened like midway through when I was doing it. So I now had to like stop what I was doing and then just redo it, and it was a mess. But so there aren't really that much resources on how to do it on just websites. There are more resources on how to implement it on things like a Chrome
WebView
extension, Chrome app.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So it took quite a while to kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
And I had the help of Timmy, who helped me do like, because you needed a back end part to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's also going to write about how he did his part. So it'll be like a two-part thing. So on my blog, I'll show how I did the front end bit, and then his blog, he'll show how he does the back end bit.
So I was looking at, okay, the first paragraph here, where you said, look, hey, that there are two parts for offline application. First, cache the app shell so that pages and assets are accessible offline. Now, this is something I see when, you know, we're coming from Conga and invalidating cache, you know, and you answered that pretty well. But I look at the progressive web app of Twitter, for instance, okay, which is on my device. You know, they basically have the Chrome, right? So the shell, as you call it, right? And the whole timeline is like out. You never, you know, see the timeline, because I figured that, okay, that since timeline changes, you know, very frequently, they, you know, they didn't want to give that aspect, you know, because it's like, you know, something is something, you know, in the past and all that. But that, for me, it made the experience like very simplistic, you know, in sense of saying, okay, perhaps the only things I could look at are, okay, Chrome, the app shell, and, you know, perhaps my profile and my followers. But, you know, why I go to Twitter primarily is timeline. So it's something that I found a bit queer, but I will try to see how other people, you know, that have, you know, real-time kind of content, how they manage that situation.
I haven't seen what the progressive web app looks like. So are you saying that when you load up the app when you're offline, you don't see any tweets? You just see, like, the empty app?
Yes, that's what I have currently, yeah.
Oh, that's kind of strange. Because, so Jake Archibald created something, kind of a Twitter-like app to kind of demo what progressive web apps are like.
Mm-hmm.
And what his method, and kind of the method that I use for my own app as well, was that, or what I would do is that when you open up the app first and then you are online,
mm-hmm.
you would get the tweets, and then it will store it in the local database.
Yeah.
So that it will just store maybe the latest like 50 tweets or something.
Yeah.
So that when you come back to the app and you're offline, you'll still be able to see those latest tweets. So work exactly the way it works on the actual native application.
Interesting.
I will send you a link to the demo that Jake Archibald did, because he created an app which he called Twitter. So it was kind of, it's basically Twitter. And the way he did it was that way. So when you open it up, you just see the tweets that were loaded before. So those are the ones that are stored in IndexedDB. And then if there is connection, then it will load more recent ones. So it should work exactly the way it works on the native application. So maybe they just haven't done that yet, but I'm sure they are working on it.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Now, maybe just to, you know, before we close this, you know, this section. Now, how big of a value is progressive web apps adding to, you know, the Nigerian web space, really?
I think it's really a lot of value, because the main problem here is saving data.
Okay.
And if you follow something like the app shell model, or just the model you use for progressive web apps, then you're saving your user like a hell of a lot of data. And so, because when they go to your sites, they're only loading the most recent content, and they don't have to load, sometimes they don't have to load anything over the network when they're going to your website. And it's even, that provides an even better use case than something like Opera Mini. So my dream is that with this progressive web apps thing, everyone is going to switch off of Opera Mini to Chrome. And then we now have like beautiful websites, and and everyone will be happy. So I think the more people use it, the better for everyone, really.
I think there's still a lot, you know, we can say about progressive web apps. It would be nice to see, I'm sure, a lot of people going to Bits of Code, you know, picking up, you know, this fantastic tutorial. We'll see a lot more Nigerian projects, Nigerian websites, you know, adopting this technology to, you know, to help reach more people. Now, the best part, at least for me, right? I mean, progressive web is very interesting, but Bits of Code, right?
Yeah.
This is something that I'll say, I mean, fantastic. A project that you've been fantastically dedicated to. I mean, you write an article on front-end, you know, web development every week. I mean, and you've been doing this for, like, forever. Could you...
Well, it's been a year and a half now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, how many articles so far?
Just, like, 80 or 81.
Wow.
Something. Wow. I guess maybe I'll have a party when I get to 100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And let's see, that's, if it's 81, that is in 19 weeks. It's after Christmas.
Yeah, it will be next year. It will be next year. Because I had 50 by the time I had been doing it for a year.
Okay.
So I feel like it will be, maybe by 2 years, I will have 100. I should actually have it. Or maybe you should throw me a party.
We'll see. So, Bits of Code, how did you come about it? And, you know, maybe can you give us an idea of the numbers also? How many people do you reach? And, you know, maybe demographics of people who come there?
Well, how I started was, well, really the main reason I started was because I listened to a podcast and people, they were talking about how, like, the value of blogging, I guess. I even wrote a post called The Value of Blogging, but just about why you should start a blog, even if you don't think you know everything. And that's kind of the reason why I didn't think I should start a blog, because I don't know everything. So why am I writing and telling people, like, the little things that I know? But I found that it's useful for everyone. Even if you're just a beginner, people might find your perspective useful as well. So you might be able to explain things in a different way. I mean, there's very, very few of my articles that are completely unique, that nobody has ever written about. But I guess people find the way that I write things kind of useful. So even if I'm writing about something that somebody else has written about, then I'm still kind of adding value. And I also really write for myself in a way, because there are many times I go back and look at my articles because I'm trying to remember how to do something. And it really solidifies knowledge. So when I'm trying to learn something, the best way for me to check to see if I actually know what I'm talking about is by writing about it. So in terms of numbers, depending on, like, because sometimes I get articles that go, like, crazy, crazy viral. And other times it's kind of stable. But I think about now I get around about, like, 40,000 to 60,000 page views a month.
Oh, really? Nice.
Mm. Yeah, and if I get, like, a crazy viral article, then it goes way up.
Cool. And I noticed, like, people from all over the world, right? And there's a bit of engagement in the, you know, in the comments section too.
Yeah. Let me actually just look at my. I'm looking at my Google Analytics.
All right.
So, if you're interested to know, 17.9% are from the US, which is the biggest group. And from Nigeria, it's only 2.56%.
No, that has to change, right?
Yeah, I know. Why? But, yeah, it's actually mainly from abroad that I get a lot of views. But I guess it's just there's more people in tech abroad than there are in Nigeria. So that's probably to be expected. I get quite a decent amount of comments as well, especially on articles that get popular and people always like to give their opinion. And sometimes I try to, if there's something I'm not completely clear on myself in the article I would write, or if you know more about this, you can, like, leave a comment, and people tend to respond to that as well.
That's pretty, pretty good. Yeah, so it's Bits of Code. I mean, like I mentioned, you know, I mean, I think this topic is something that we could spend even, you know, the whole episode talking about. I'm sure Ekwemi has some questions here. Hi, Ekwemi.
I'm interested in, okay, I guess two main things. One is the work you do at B speak about media, because I mean, I'm one of those people who have seen it grow from just, I don't know if it was just, but from the tech cover blog to all the different things. So it's like this empire that is just sort of matching on. But anyway, I just wanted to know, and I guess people will be interested to know, like, what happens under the hood there, what, in terms of what you do.
Well, I'm sure people must know, like, both Techaba and Zikoko are currently on WordPress. So when I joined them, which was just kind of over a year ago, it was more to do with kind of adding functionality, especially to Zikoko because it was brand new. So just things that we were trying to add that we wanted people to be able to do, and also some work on the back end as well. And for the future, we're trying to revamp as much as possible, where we want like new sites, because the sites may have worked at the time when they were created, but I mean the sites as they are now may have worked like when they were just launched, but they've grown a lot, so there's a lot that needs to change. So hopefully we hope to see some changes there soon, and that's kind of what we're working on at the moment.
Nice, nice. Is there any product, like, I don't know, any exciting thing that's going to come?
Yeah, soon? There are some exciting things, but you're going to have to wait till they're launched.
I don't like waiting. That's all good.
Yeah. There should be something coming out actually quite soon, so stay tuned for that.
All right, okay.
Yeah. So cool.
Yeah, you were going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say, tech for a media company is actually big. I mean, one company that I've, you know, really, you know, admired for that is Financial Times. Financial Times, for instance, they have, they basically push the web forward, and I'm like, you know, sometimes it's not what you expect from, you know, a media first company. Is it becoming the case that, you know, media companies are more tech, you know, across board? Like, is this something that we should see more with media companies?
Yeah, I think so. I think the companies that really push technology are ones that are so reliant on it, and media has moved to being completely reliant on, like, websites as opposed to TV or having a print. So definitely I would say so. I feel like I get to do things that are very different. It's not just, like, simple page layout stuff. You get to like do a lot of complex things. So I feel like with media, you get a variety of different things in technology to work on, and you get to really push the boundaries. And media is really, really all about user experience. So you get to do a lot of work on how do we make everything even more easy or more, we provide people an even better user experience. So that's really good as well.
Nice, nice. All right, so I just wonder, in tech about, because you seem to be the sort of only woman that I see being, that I see pushed as, like, women in tech. So I just wonder, like, how is that in general, maybe at Bikabao or just in the tech scene in Lagos or Nigeria in general, like, how is the representation of women, young girls, and if there's, is there anything you are doing personally or as the media, the Bikabao Media Group, to encourage and support women in technology?
I think Bikabao is a great company to work for, because I never really noticed that I'm the only, like, woman in tech there. And I mean, that's the best kind of environment where you don't really, where it's not like you, where you don't have to feel like you are, oh, a woman in tech, you're just doing your job.
Yeah.
There's definitely still a huge imbalance in the gender, so amount of women versus amount of men. There are only like a couple of other people that I know that are more out there and are kind of showing themselves as, like, they're really good developers. So, like, Moi is one of, like, a really great developer as well.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, what we can do, I think you just need to work for a good company that's some place like Big Cabal or even like Digital Drift or Digital Craft rather, where you just where you're working, you don't have to feel like you are the only woman there or something like that. I don't know what I can do to help people more. If you have any ideas or if there are any women out there who need help, they can always reach out to me. I'm sure there's more that can be done. I just haven't figured out what I can do yet that will really make an impact. Besides just myself being out there and showing other people that there are women in tech. So, yeah.
Cool. Good, good. I mean, the willingness is there. It's not like, hey, I don't know anything about
that. Yeah.
Anyone who is out there listening and you know women that would like to be supported or encouraged, you can send them over to Ire and she would, you know, help and take care of them. So yeah, that's all my questions. I don't know, Francis, back to you.
Yeah, I mean, I feel we should really do a part two of this because I mean there's so much to talk about. We've gone through, you know, progressive enhancements, progressive web apps, you know, Ire speaking at the Frontiers conference, and we would definitely link the video of her talk once it's out. You know, Ire is also a Google developer expert. She's also part of Google Women in Tech project, right? Yeah,
Women Tech Makers,
helping other women, you know, get into tech just by, you know, doing what she does best. Nice. I think it's been a very nice, you know, refreshing episode. It's good to be back with these episodes. Ire, you've really helped us, you know, start off again. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so until next time, guys, thanks.
Yeah, bye.